is a shocking, shocking chapter once you read through it for Americans. Americans have foolishly believed that slavery was ended back in the 1860s. And Jeremiah 34 will show some history that we've repeated in our country. And slavery has not ended. And it's still going on. Okay, so the first, Jeremiah 34, the first seven verses are simply about some history for Israel, Jerusalem in particular. Then verse 8 starts into this idea of slavery. The Bible regulates slavery. It doesn't condemn it per se, it regulates it. And we'll see the patterns that the Bible has for it. Now, if we're going to be open-minded of what it says, Jeremiah 34:1, the word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army, and all the kingdoms of the earth, of his dominion, and all the people, fought against Jerusalem and against all the cities thereof, saying, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, go speak to Zedekiah, king of Judah, and tell him, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, he shall burn it with fire. Okay, he did that. And thou shalt not escape out of his hand, but shall surely be taken and delivered into his hand. Then I shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon, and he shall speak with thee mouth to mouth, and thou shalt go to Babylon. That happened. Yet hear the word of the Lord, O Zedekiah, king of Judah. Thus saith the Lord of thee, thou shalt not die by the sword. That came true. But thou shalt die in peace, and with the burnings of thy fathers, the former kings which were before thee, so shall they burn odors for thee, and they will lament thee, saying, Ah, Lord, for I have pronounced the word, saith the Lord. So Zedekiah is going to have a burial and everything, and people are going to mourn for him. Then Jeremiah the prophet spake all these words unto Zedekiah the king of Judah in Jerusalem, when the king of Babylon's army fought against Jerusalem and against all the cities of Judah that were left, against Lachish and against Azekah, for these defense cities remain in the cities of Judah. Okay, now remember, we've covered a little bit about this, about Zedekiah, and chapter 52 will repeat this history. That Zedekiah was afraid of public pressure. He was afraid of public opinion. He knew Jeremiah was speaking the truth, but he was afraid to talk to him about it. You still have that going on today. Jesus had secret disciples. Nicodemus was one of those for a while. And so any Bible believer is going to have secret disciples. If you have a radio program, you'll never find out who they are often. A lot of people listen to radio broadcasts that I'm on down there. I catch wind of them every once in a while. They would never come to church, but they will listen to radio broadcasts. There's one Catholic feller. He listens every Sunday, and he just listens, I guess, to get mad. And every single Sunday, he sends me articles every once in a while so that I further my Bible education. The last one he sent me was about the mess. I think the math. And it was a mess. And it didn't help me at all. Okay, Zedekiah was told by Jeremiah, you go humble yourself to the king. If you do that, you will become a prisoner of them, but you will live in luxury. You will live in Babylon. You will live out your days. You will not die by the sword. You will live a good long life in Babylon. And when you die, people will give you a real nice burial and everything. They'll honor you. But Zedekiah was afraid of that. He was afraid to humble himself. So after the year and a half siege that Babylon put on Jerusalem, he gathered a band of people of the king, and he took off and tried to outrun Nebuchadnezzar. And of course, they've got caught. And as they got caught, he was brought in front of the king. And the king basically said, "Naughty, naughty, Zedekiah, you shouldn't have done that." And he said, "Because you did that, here's what's going to happen." And so what happened, he brought his two sons in front of Zedekiah, killed them right in front of his face, and then he poked his eyeballs out. So the last thing that he saw was his sons dying. Okay, and that's because he refused to listen to the words of Jeremiah. His sons did not have to die, but they did. Okay, so that's Zedekiah. Now verse 8. Verse 8, we get into more of this about Zedekiah, and during this siege, he proclaimed, he had what is known as the Emancipation Proclamation. We learn from history that men don't learn from history, therefore they're destined to repeat it. America happens to have repeated the same history. Verse 8, this is the word that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord after that the king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people which were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them. Whenever a politician uses the word liberty, hold on to your wallet and watch them like a hawk. Liberty, liberty, liberty. That's the favorite catchword. 2 Peter 2 verse 19 says they promise liberty, but they are servants of corruption. That's what Martin Luther King proclaimed back in the 1860s. Liberty, 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 rights, 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 freedom. We got our freedom, freedom, freedom. And enslaved an entire generation of people. And it's still doing it. Okay, so liberty, that's a favorite catchword of politicians. Verse 9, he says that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being in Hebrew, or Hebrew-esque, go free, that none should serve himself of them, to wit, of a Jew his brother. Okay, now this verse is a nice little verse as far as defining a word. Notice in the Bible, a Hebrew is a Jew. Okay, 34:9. That's one of those verses you got to get that down in your memory bank. A Hebrew and a Jew, that's synonymous in the Bible. Jeremiah 34:9, a verse you can write beside it would be Philippians 3:6. Is that what I want? Let me check it. I need to make a note of that. I think Philippians 3:6 and Acts 22:3, what we want to put there. Philippians 3:6. Let's see. 3:5 in particular. 3:5 is what I want. Paul is speaking. He says, circumcised the eighth day of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, and Hebrew of Hebrews. Okay, so if you take the Jeremiah 34:9, a Hebrew and a Jew synonymous, Paul says he was of Israel, a Hebrew of Hebrews. That makes Israel and Hebrew synonymous, which makes Jew synonymous. Why is that important? Acts 22, verse 3. All in case a British Israelite tries to tell you that the white race is Israel and then the ones over there in Jerusalem are Jews. Acts 22:3, Paul says, I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city of Cilicia. So those are some very important references. Mark 14, verse 70 says about Peter that he was from Galilee. Mark 14, 70. And that is in the northern tribes. He was of Galilee, Mark 14, 70. And then in Galatians chapter 2, verse 14, Paul said, you're a Jew. Galatians 2:14. So what that does, it gives us references so that we can define the word Jew, Hebrew, Israelite. They're synonymous in the Bible. Very important to catch those verses all together. Okay, so just for the definition, not actually looking at the truth behind it, just looking at the definition of the word as how the Bible uses it. Hebrew, Jew, Israel, Israelite. All synonymous. Verse 10, Jeremiah 34:10. Now when all the princes and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his manservant and everyone his maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them anymore, then they obeyed and let them go. But afterward they turned and caused the servants and the handmaids whom they had let go free to return and brought them into subjection for the servants and for the handmaids. Okay, and this is the same thing Dishonest Abe did in the 1860s. Identical. We learn from history that men seldom learn from history. Okay, now if you would look in 1 Kings chapter 12, this is a few years earlier to this, when Israel was being split. Israel began with three kings. All three served 40 years. King Saul, bad guy. King David, good guy. 40 years. Solomon, 40 years. Start off good, end up bad. Then he has his son take over the kingdom, Rehoboam. And Rehoboam was spoiled growing up, obviously. And at this time, the Lord's going to split the kingdom from Rehoboam in 1 Kings 12. In this chapter, the people came to Rehoboam and they said, how are you going to treat us? Are you going to put us taxes on us like your dad did? Or are you going to kind of back off? He said, well, I'll come back 3 days. And he said, then I'll give you an answer. He asked the older men, and the old men said, if you back off, these people will serve you to the day you die. They'll love you. They'll honor you. And then the young punks, his age, the peer pressure of his day, they said, you got to make them pay out the piper. Put it to them. You know, put the hammer down on them. Make them obey you. So he foolishly listened to the young, his peer pressure. Here's the tax man coming out. 1 Kings 12, verse 17. 1 Kings 12, 17. He says, but as for the children of Israel which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the tribute, and all Israel stoned him with stones that he died. So that's how they treated the tax collector. Pretty interesting. Now that's what you call a tax rebellion. Therefore, King Rehoboam made speed to get him up to his chariot and to flee Jerusalem. He's scared to death. So Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day, and it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king over all Israel. There was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. And when Rehoboam was come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin, and 144,000 chosen men, which were warriors to fight against the house of Israel, to bring the kingdom again to Rehoboam the son of Solomon. Okay, now he's setting up a civil war, which isn't civil. Verse 22. But the word of God came unto Shemaiah, the man of God, saying, speak unto Rehoboam, son of Solomon, king of Judah, and unto the house of Judah, and Benjamin, to the remnant of the people, saying, thus said the Lord, ye shall not go up nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Return every man to his house, for this thing is from me. They hearkened therefore to the word of the Lord and returned to depart according to the word of the Lord. Well, thank God he listened. He listened. No civil war. Rehoboam got two southern tribes. Jeroboam got ten northern. Well, Abraham Lincoln didn't listen to that advice. What did he do? Okay, verse 12. This is the Lord's comment, and then we'll get into some more things that the Bible says on slavery. He said, therefore, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I made a covenant with your fathers in the day that I brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondmen. Saying, okay? That reference right there reveals the first occasion of slavery by a nation. It's in Exodus chapter 1. As far as history goes, the first occurrence of national slavery where a nation set up slavery was Egypt. They're called the house of bondage 10 times in the Bible. Egypt, that's the black race. They enslaved the Jews. I don't think they have given them any civil rights since then. I don't think the Jews have cried for their rights. I don't think they've cried for their 40 acres and a donkey that the blacks have cried for in this country. They haven't griped about it once. Nothing was said. That's the first occasion of it as historically as far as the Bible goes. So what does the Bible do on slavery? Verse 14, at the end of 7 years, let ye go every man his brother in Hebrew, which hath been sold unto thee. And when he hath served thee 6 years, thou shalt let him go free from thee. But your fathers hearken not unto me, neither incline their ear. Okay, the Bible pattern is that if someone has a slave, how do you get a slave? Well, it can be a person can be born into it. A person can become a captive of war. It can be a criminal who cannot pay his debt to his victim. Okay, captive, and that's basically how it goes. Okay, if someone is a slave, they are a slave for 6 years. The seventh year, they are to be let free. When they are let free, they are to be given some funds to help them get started again. You find this in Exodus chapter 21. Exodus 21. But what if the slave liked his relationship with his master, which many of them did? He liked the security of having a roof over his head, of a weekly paycheck coming in. It's interesting, if you look up the word employee, it's identical definition to a servant. It's identical. Okay, and this is where we come up with benefits. It's in 1 Timothy 6. Okay, if the slave likes the relationship, what are they to do? Exodus 21, verse 2. Exodus 21, 2. If thou buy an Hebrew servant 6 years, he shall serve thee, or shall serve. And the seventh, he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master hath given him a wife, and she hath borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. Then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, unto the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. So he puts an earring in him. And that's what earrings are. They're a sign of slavery. And that is a sign to everybody that this man is somebody's slave. Like a wedding ring. Like a wedding ring tells everybody I'm married. Okay, so the earring would be a sign of slavery. I see a lot of Americans with several earrings. I didn't know they could serve several masters. I guess their master would be sin. Okay, now this occurred in America. It occurred in Virginia. Virginia actually passed law stating that when a servant is let free, they are to provide him a house and property. And they did this for over 100,000 people in Virginia. Nobody in history ever told us that one, did they? You know, the bad South and everything. No, that's what they did. Okay. Now, what happened as far as history goes? Okay, verse 14. Read that. 15. And it says, you were now turned and had done right in my sight in proclaiming liberty every man to his neighbor. Okay, so that was right to set them free. The Lord said that's right. And ye have made a covenant before me in the house which was called by my name, but ye turned and polluted my name and caused every man his servant and every man his handmaid, whom ye had set at liberty at their pleasure, to return and brought them into subjection to be brought on you for servants and for handmaids. Therefore thus saith the Lord, ye have not hearkened unto me in proclaiming liberty, every one his brother and every man his neighbor. Behold, I proclaim a liberty for you, saith the Lord, to the sword, to the pestilence, to the famine, and I will make you to be removed in all kingdoms of the earth. So that's the punishment. Okay, what has happened in America? Our illustrious 16th president gets in office, sneaks in on a midnight train because he's scared to death of somebody. His political foes really raked them over to coals on that cowardice. And as an inaugural address, he said this, I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so. That's what he said on March 4th. That's interesting. In the same speech, he said, I therefore consider that in the view of the Constitution, the laws of the Union is unbroken. That's a double speak right there. Clinton couldn't do any better than that. As you keep reading, let's see. Lincoln said, apprehension seems to exist among the people of the southern states. Well, of course. He said, we denounce the lawless invasion by armed force of the soil of any state as the gravest of crimes. Well, that's a pretty good statement. He stated, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence. There will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere. He's lying through his teeth when he said it. He said, the chief magistrate derives all his authority from the people, and they have referred none upon to fix terms for the separation of states. The people themselves can do this if also they choose, but the executive as such had nothing to do with it. He's stating there, saying the southern states, if they want to secede, go ahead. He said, I can't do anything about it. Now you talk about a roller coaster ride he's putting people on. Paul Whitcomb said, a writer about Lincoln, he said, Lincoln appealed from the basis of democracy to the basis of despotism, from the ballot to the bullet. Congressman of Ohio, Vallandigham, good man, statesman, he said, it was the duty of an honest executive to make that information full and partial and complete instead of spreading before us a labored and lawyerly vindication of his own course of policy, a policy which has precipitated us into a terrible and bloody revolution. He stated about Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln took the oath of office to support the Constitution and delivered his inaugural, a message, I regret to say, not written in the direct and straightforward language which becomes an American president and an American statesman, and which was expected from the plain, blunt, honest man of the Northwest. But with the forked tongue and crooked counsel of a New York politician, leaving 30 millions of people in doubt whether it meant peace or war. That man was arrested for no crime, put in jail for no crime. That man could not have the writ of habeas corpus, and it took him about a year and a half to get out of jail. That was Abraham Lincoln that did that. Abraham Lincoln had a 9-year-old boy arrested because he was selling a newspaper that discredited Lincoln's political stance. Fine, upstanding person. When the war got going, the War of Northern Aggression, if you talk to anybody from the South, he declared the Emancipation Proclamation. Nothing but a news media gimmick. It freed no one. How do you know that? People in the North still had their slaves. Politicians still had their slaves. They didn't let them go free until the 13th Amendment. After Lincoln got shot, the 39th Congress passed the 13th Amendment without the vote of one state down south. That supposedly freed the slaves. So now the slaves were free. Then they turned around and passed the 14th Amendment. What did that do? That brought the same slaves right back into subjection. Didn't take, put them back into subjection under any man, and put them under subjection of Congress. If you read the 14th Amendment, I don't know if I got the Constitution in the back of this thing. If you read the 14th Amendment, you'll read these words over and over and over through the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th Amendment, and Congress has right to pass laws to bring this into subjection, and that's the words they use. They use the word subjection. 14th Amendment, it says, all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction. Congress shall have power to enforce by legislative appropriate legislation. They brought them into slavery. And all the goofiness that we have going on in the courts right now is because of the 14th Amendment. They have created an artificial person. And they know that's what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. Chief Justice Thurgood for Nothing Marshall said one time that the Constitution was a terrible document until we had the 14th Amendment. So he knows. He knows. Okay, that's what's happened in our country. What'd they do? Oh, let's see if I can find this quote. I have it in about 5 or 6 times. I've got to be able to find this. Here's what a black man said after the Civil War. A Negro editor in Charleston, Richard Harvey Kane, in 1871, observed, "When the smoke and the fighting is over, the Negroes have gained nothing and the whites have nothing left, while the jackals have all the booty." He's talking about Congress. That's what's happened in our country. Land of the free, home of the brave. Well, you're going to have to stand on your rights in order to get that. And you have to be pretty belligerent sometimes in order to retain that. So we've learned from history that we seldom learn from history. America has a great heritage. And in the Old Testament, the Republic was a Republic of Israel called the Commonwealth of Israel. And America is a republic. It's supposed to be a republic. And don't let any news media guy deceive you in saying it's a democracy. We don't want a democracy. Not in our country. A democracy would cut Bible-believing Christians' throats. The Constitution protects our God-given rights. And actually what it does, it limits bureaucrats from stepping on our God-given rights. Okay, so that's Jeremiah 34. I think I've got to read verse 18 and following. He says, "And I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, which have not performed the words of the covenant, which they have made before me, when they cut the calf in twain and pass between the parts thereof, the princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem, the eunuchs, the priests, the people of the land, which pass between the parts of the calf. I will even give them into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life, and their dead bodies shall be for meat unto the fowls of heaven and to the beasts of the earth." That's where we get the saying, strictly for the birds. And a politician needs to be reminded that they are public servants. And we are the public. And we need to behave thus as a king would behave on his property. Lawful and obedient to the Lord. 21. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his princes will I give unto the hand of the enemies, into the hand of them that seek their life, into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which had gone up from you. Behold, I will command, saith the Lord, and cause them to return to this city, and they shall fight against it, and take it, and burn it with fire, and I will make the cities of Judah a desolation without an inhabitant. That happened historically. Okay, that was predicted, anywhere from 5 to 10 years before it took place. Probably closer to a couple of years, but right there close. Jeremiah 35 is a great chapter for families, for parents. Jeremiah 35 will show that if the preacher says one thing and your daddy says another, you are to obey your father. You obey him and him to the degree of truth. And I don't care if it goes direct contrary to what I would say. You obey children or obey their parents. It doesn't say children obey their preacher. Okay, obviously we would understand that a parent that likes a preacher would probably have his kids under somebody they'd agree with. But we're not going to agree with 100% of the time. But if there's a conflict between something that I believe and you believe, your family is to obey you, the dad. Jeremiah 35 gives a great promise and blessing to children that do that. Jeremiah 35. This shows the power of the family, the power of the home, the importance of the home with God. The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go into the house of the Rechabites. Speak unto them, bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. I doubt this is fermented. I highly doubt it. But maybe it is. Who knows? It doesn't really matter if it is or if it isn't, as far as this goes. Then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah. What a name. And his brethren, and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites. And I brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hannah, the son of Igdaliah. Whoa, that's a whopper of a name. That's one you don't want to name your son. But it says, a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princes, which was above the chamber of Messiah, the son of Shalom, the keeper of the door. There's an interesting word, the keeper of the door. Titus chapter 2 mentions that the woman is the keeper of the house. Some men interpret that as she's got to stay in the house all the time. In the box. I wonder if the keeper of the door has to stay inside the door. You know, pretty skinny woman if she gets inside the door. There's another one, the keeper of the wardrobe. Does that mean they got to stay in the closet all the time? Okay, obviously we can see the definition as far as the Bible uses these things. Okay, a mother with children obviously should want to be with home with her children, if she can. Verse 5, it says, and I set before the sons of the house of Rechabites pots full of wine and cups, and I said unto them, drink ye wine. So here they're going to have a confrontation here, okay? Dad said, don't drink it. Here's a man of God. Here's a prophet. Here's Jeremiah. He says, drink it. They said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyard, nor have any. But all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live at many days in the land where ye be strangers. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab the son of Rechab our father, in all that he hath charged us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters. nor to build houses for us to dwell in, neither have we vineyard, nor field, nor seed. But we have dwelt in tents, and have obeyed, and done according to all that Jonadab our father commanded us. Now notice, the idea of the drinking of the wine, if it's fermented, we can have a Bible verse stating, okay, he's got a Bible verse backing that up. As far as drinking liquor. You know, look not upon the wine when it giveth his color in the cup. Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging. Whosoever deceived thereby is not wise. So we got a Bible verse backing up that one. But where does it say in the Bible you can't build a house? The 11th commandment, thou shalt not build a house. Okay, so that gets in the idea where if a parent has a rule, they don't have to have a Bible verse backing it up. They could, but they don't have to. It just be something they don't like. Why can't we do anything else? Because I said so. That's good enough. Why not? Because I don't like it. You know, just because I don't like it. That's a parent's right. And the Bible will honor children that listen to that and obey that. It will honor them. The Bible will give them blessings for that. Nor build houses for us to dwell in. Don't you think one of them kids say, I'm tired of putting this tent up and down. But you say, why did he give them that charge? I don't know. Maybe he didn't buy stock in a building company. I don't know why. That's just something he did. What's wrong with having a vineyard? Nothing. Why couldn't they plant a garden? I don't know. He had a reason. I don't know what his reason is. But they listened to their father. And they listened and passed it down to their generation. Verse 10, I read that. Verse 11. But it came to pass when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came up into the land that we said, come and let us go to Jerusalem for the fear of the army of the Chaldeans, for the fear of the army of the Assyrians, so we dwelt at Jerusalem. Okay, they came in a city. Didn't say anything about building houses, though. Then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and tell the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will ye not receive instruction to hearken to my words, saith the Lord? The words of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, that he commanded his sons not to drink wine, are performed.